Welcome to the Guthrie America podcast. We sit down with amazing people who do life in our community and people who are from here because we believe every story should be told. I'm your host, Hedy Coleman. Today, I'm sitting down with Scott Mick. Before we jump into this conversation with Scott, will you please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast and leave a review? It would mean the world to me. Also, shout out to our sponsors, Kevin Kraft over at State Farm. Here's the thing, Kevin is the reason that I have life insurance. Kevin's the reason that I understand life insurance. I think I had life insurance before Kevin, but Kevin's the one that sat down to me and really gave me a big picture. I remember when Kevin told me that life insurance is love insurance, and I was like, man, that makes sense. I never thought about it that way, but I love Kevin. Also, just shout out to North Church for all the support they continue to do and give towards, you know, I believe in connecting folks in order to have a greater community. As the chamber says, Guthrie is where community wins. And so I want to keep pushing for that. So thank you to those sponsors. Scott, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. I have no complaints.
Thank you for coming to my home.
Yeah, yeah.
And sitting in our living room. If you don't know, we're in my living room, and I enjoy being able to have folks come in and hang out with me and getting their story. Now the weather in this kind of weather is this wet? Like it's kind of cloudy for those of you who are kind of cloudy. About 50 something degrees. It's a good day, like to maybe have your windows up. Does this kind of weather make you want to sleep in? Or are you like, no, I'm ready to go regardless?
No, I've gotten up at 6:30 so much now that I don't even need an alarm clock. And even days I don't have to get up, my body still wakes up and I'm like, man, I just like to sleep in one day. And I can't, you know, when I was a teenager, you sleep all day and now I can't, you know, I don't know, maybe my bed or something, but my body hurts if I lay there too long.
Yeah, if you stay in there too long? Yeah. No, I think that's common, yeah. I'm like
I got to get up.
Yes, your back is hurting.
Yep.
Like, if you did, so yeah, I don't know if it's my bed. Well, I'm similar to you in that way.
Yep.
So I don't know if it's our beds or it's just, I don't know what that is. But yeah, I can't be in bed too long. I got to get up if I don't. But I like this kind of weather. I say I like to sleep in. I got up this morning about like you. Early and was ready to rock and roll. That's cool. Now, Scott, I like to open with this question because it kind of helps people know who you are. I don't do a bio or anything like that. I let the people tell about themselves. But I like when I ask this question is like, how would the people who are closest to you, friends, family, how do you think they would describe you? How would they if they had to introduce you, what do you think they would say about you?
Oh, that's a hard. I would hope that they would say, you know, use words like kind and loyal and, you know, funny, you know, a joy to be around. I think sometimes they would use words probably like cranky, you know, but I don't know. You know, I just try to be me. I try to be a good person to everybody and I try to treat people with respect you know, I try to make people laugh when I can. You know, I'm a big laughter guy. Like, I love comedy and I love, you know, I like watching people smile, you know. I don't, you know, we have too many reasons to frown.
Yeah.
It seems like in the world now, and so when you get, you know, you get a smile out of somebody, that's probably good. So I don't know, things like that. Like, I mean, honestly, like, I think people think I'm caring, and you know, I've had kids that I taught, you know, say, man, when you first walked in, like, you were, you know, you're a giant and you're intimidating and all this stuff. But a student that I taught one time, Danielle Jones, I don't know, you may know Danielle.
Yeah, I think so.
So Danielle, I think, said, describe me as a bulldog teddy bear.
Oh, wow.
So,
I
don't know. I guess I try to be caring and I try to love on people and I'm not always successful at it.
But you're trying,
some,
though.
Some people right? are hard to love, but you know, you gotta try.
So. You gotta try. Yeah, because of being like a taller guy, bigger guy, do you find yourself being more intentional about how you come into a room or how you approach people? Like, I had a boss once. He's like 6'8" or so. He's just a big guy. And I remember when we were sitting down one time, he's like, yeah, Hedy, it took me a while to understand, but I really had to understand how people felt when I just walked in the room because of how big and tall I am. And he says, I really try to find ways not to make myself smaller in a demeaning way,
right?
But just so I can make people feel a little bit more.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. You know, my boss with Flowmore Rex, he's 6'6". He's got a son that's 6'8". And so, you know, one of the things that I've learned from him with the job that I'm doing now, when we go on sales calls, is he always comes in and he tries to find a way. He tries to find a way to make people laugh right off the bat, and usually he says something about himself, like one of his, you know, it may be like for instance, he'll say, you know, if he's talking to somebody and he'll tell them, well, I'm 66 years old. Well, then that'll automatically open it up to they'll say, well, I'm so-and-so. And he'll look at him and say, man, I got issues older than you. You know what I mean? I mean, just little stuff like that. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get people kind of get their guard down a little bit. And then you can have a conversation. But you don't think about – I don't really think about it, you know, as far as being, you know, intimidating or – but – I mean, I can imagine when I was teaching school, you know, middle school kids especially. Imagine if I did walk up on them. It was this dude's big, you know. But I don't know. I like I said, I try to use humor and everything. So that's probably the way that I would get people's guard down.
Humor is a good way.
I love humor. I mean,
that's a good way. Now, if I was to ask Jerry, your wife,
mm-hmm.
like, what was one of the things that was like made you head over heels with Scott, would she be like, he's so funny?
She might. I think with her, she know the, I think if you asked her, we've been together for a long time, 20 some years.
Yes.
But, I think if you'd asked her when we were dating, what she would have said would be different than what she would say after 20 years of marriage, 21 years of marriage or whatever.
Yeah, the things, you know, that she started appreciating about you now are a lot different from when,
I think
that.
It would be different now. But I think she thinks I'm funny. I mean,
Bernadette, come here. Yeah, I'm going to see what my wife said. That's a great, I love that. So tell me about your family.
Okay,
my wife is going to walk in and she's going to interrupt us. But
no, it's okay.
Oh, here she is.
Hi, Bernie.
Hey, so Scott and I were just talking, mm-hmm. and I asked him, did Jerry dig him because he's funny, because he likes to make people laugh?
Yeah.
And he says, he pauses that, and he says, well, you know what? What she liked about me at the beginning is different from what she probably likes about me now. Would you say that's true? Like, you and I have been together 20-something years earlier mm-hmm. versus now. Is there different things that you appreciated about me now?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the same, but now it's added to the...
It's added goodness.
Yeah. That's what it's... That's
see? It's, yeah. Look how good you did.
That's good. So tell us a little bit more about your family.
All right. So I grew up in Enid, and that's where I was born and raised. Got, you know, good traditional family. Mom, dad both work, you know, never wanted for nothing when I was a kid. I mean, we weren't rich, we weren't poor, we were just somewhere in the middle, you know. My dad was a mechanic by trade. If we needed something, he took on extra jobs. I mean, that's, you know, he just provided.
Yeah.
He's good people, good Christian home. You know, I have no complaints about my family at all. And then I got married, you know, to my wife, Jerry, and we have two children, Bryant and Blakely. Bryant's 16. He got his driver's license yesterday.
What?
So he was, he's pretty happy about that. Now we got to find him a reliable means of transportation that's not going to break my budget. and his idea of reliable and not budget breaking, and mine are two completely different things. And then my daughter Blakely is 10. She'll be 11 in May.
Oh wow!
I'm trying to think. I always mess this up, and she's like, "How do you not know how old I am?" But now she's 10, and she'll be 11 in May, I believe. Either 10 and 11 or 11 and 12. She's in the fifth grade. I know that.
Yeah.
My kids are completely different. You know, Bryant likes athletics and this and that, and Blakely wouldn't. She does not care about athletics at all. She doesn't want to watch, you know. You want to go to Thunder game? No. Do you want to go? No. You know, she's into art, and she's into, you know, she plays Minecraft with some of her friends and stuff all the time, and then she's very, very artistic, and like she puts together paintings and drawings and stuff all the time, and you just sit there and go, that's good, you know.
Yeah.
And then you say, you know, Bryant, draw me something. It's stick figures, and it looks like a 3-year old did. Right. Yeah. Like, he's like, I don't want to do this. This is dumb. You know, when they were little, they all, you know, they played Legos. Well, Bryant would come out, and his idea of building Legos, everything was a square. So he would build. Oh, this is a house. Well, this is a barn. Everything's just a square. Like.
Yeah.
Well, the same sets of Legos, you give them to Blakely, and she builds these big three-dimensional objects, and it's like, well, how does your mind work like that, child? Because my mind doesn't work that way.
Yeah, mine either.
So, but now they're good kids, and like I said, I love my family to death. My wife is a great lady, cares about people. Okay, so when we were in high school, I was a year older than her, so I was a sophomore, she was a freshman. We had two friends that were dating. They set us up on a blind date. We went on one date, hated each other, never talked to each other in high school again. Ran with two completely different crowds. I mean, it just, you know, opposites kind of deal. And then when I was in college, I went to work. She was the assistant manager at a music store in the mall. Like, you remember when you had a mall and you'd go buy CDs? Yeah. Like, I'm dating myself here. I mean, you could even go to this place and buy. They had cassettes, you know.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So, but no, she worked at Disc Jockey, and she was the assistant manager. And then when I was in college, I worked there, and so we kind of started dating again through some mutual friends. Went to a couple places where we had mutual friends, and the rest is history. But
do you remember whenever you proposed?
Did you have a
Were you that kind of guy that you went all out, you planned it through, or was it like, I'm just going to ask and we're going to move on?
No, I planned it. I did it at my family's Christmas gathering in my grandma's house. I took a tape. Like, okay, so here I'm dating myself again. So used to, they had a VCR.
Oh, right? Wow.
So I mean, this is, you know, we're talking, you know, VCR, we're talking
Google
20
it,
years.
Google it, young right. people.
Yeah, if you don't know what it is. So used to, when you recorded something, you recorded it on tape.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And so like the camcorder we had, you stuck a full VHS tape in this thing, and that's what you recorded it on. So I basically, you know, just made this recording of me, kind of like we're sitting here right now with just the camera on me saying, you know, Jerry, this is, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I told my family I loved them and I was glad to be with them at Christmas time and blah, 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 blah. And I said, Jerry, if you want your Christmas present, ask me for it. So we wrapped this deal up. We threw it underneath the Christmas tree. And my cousin was the one that year. So like the older kids, we got every year when it's Christmas time, everybody met at my grandma's house. And, you know, we gave out presents. Everybody brought presents for everybody. And so the older kids got to be the ones to hand the gifts to everybody. Well, my cousin Blake was the one that got chosen that year to hand out the gifts to everybody. And I told him, I said, listen, there's a gift back there. I said, don't hand it out. Just stick it way back underneath that Christmas tree and just hand everything else. And I showed him which one it was. And he said, okay. He said, well, what are you going to do? I said, after everybody opens their gifts and stuff, I said, all I want you to do is just go, hey, there's one back here at the back. I don't know whose this is. And then give it to Jerry. And so he's like, all right, cool. So long story longer, she go through the whole Christmas wrapping thing. He tells her, oh, there's gifts for you, Jerry. She unwraps it. It's a videotape, and it just says play me
it's
on
the
it.
It's a VHS.
Yeah, it's just a VHS tape. And on top, all it's written is play me. So she sticks it in my grandma's VCR and turns TV on, you know, and plays the deal. Well, meanwhile, while she's watching the screen, I just pulled the ring out of my pocket and got down on my knee and waited for her to turn around. So, and then asked her to marry
me. Do you think she knew when she turned around? Like, did she have a clue? Or
I think she knew when she turned around. I think she knew. I don't think she knew, like, what the tape was about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think
she's watching this tape.
So she's watching this deal. But then I think when she got there, then she figured, like, so. But I'd already talked to her mom and asked permission to marry her and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And went through all that rigmarole. And,
yeah.
And that was it. So it was planned. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I didn't have doves and wasn't no horse-drawn carriage or.
That was cool. Did you come up with that yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. I like that.
I thought, man, how can I do this? And, you know, way she'll remember. And I think she still has that VHS tape somewhere.
Get out of here. I see her. I'm going to ask her.
She probably has it in the box, and I bet you it's in the box. Funny thing, I bet you it's in the box with our wedding stuff. So when we bought our house here in Guthrie the first time, we moved from a house over here on Pine Street out to our house that we had bought here in Guthrie the first time we lived here. And so, I said, hey, we got to start, you know, we lived there for 7 years. I was like, we got to start getting rid of some stuff. Like, we got too much junk. It's shit, you know, we got too much stuff. I'm not moving all this stuff.
Yeah.
So she went through stuff, right? And so I'd walk out in the garage and I'd see a box of something that had been sitting there for 7 years and nobody had ever opened it. And I just throw it in the back of my pickup. When I went to work that day, I'd throw it in the dumpster. Don't even know what's in it. Don't care. You know what I mean? I haven't opened this box in 7 years. Oh, it's probably not important.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I'm doing this, and I'm snatching a box, you know, one a week, you know, trying to where she doesn't catch on to what I'm doing. And so I get this box, and I throw it in the back of my pickup, and I drive to work, and I start to throw it in the dumpster where the top of the box comes open.
Thank God.
It's like her wedding bouquet. Oh, it's like our wedding pictures. It's like I'm sure that tape was probably in there. So I put it back in the truck, drove it back, stuck. And then I quit throwing boxes away because I didn't know what else she had packed up in there.
Or what you have already thrown away.
Yeah.
Has there been anything come up?
No. We haven't looked around. We haven't looked around and went, man, I wonder where that went. So, you know, like I said, you just collect stuff. I mean, you know, the longer you live somewhere, you just stuff.
For sure.
And then when you start going through it, you're like, why do we still have this?
Yes.
You know, somebody else could use this or, you know, give it away or sell it or what. I mean,
if I haven't seen it in a while, I'm like, but still, the crazy thing is, I don't know if you like this. You have seen it in a while, but when it's time to throw it away, it's still like some pressure. He's like, I haven't looked at this in years.
Okay.
I feel like
so there's a commercial out right now. And it's a kid. I don't know if it may not be a commercial. Maybe it's one of those reels or something on Facebook, TikTok. But it's this kid that comes in and he's like fixing a bed and he's like, man, if we just had two blocks of wood, and he's explaining to his dad, if we just had two blocks of wood, one like this, one like this, and you see the dad go, and he runs downstairs and he like pulls out this tub of junk.
Yeah.
And he pulls it out and there's the exact, and then he pulls this block of wood with a piece of wood like this and a piece of wood like this, and it's exactly 10 inches long, and he's like, yes, you know, like I've been saving this forever. Oh. You know what I mean? And then he runs back up and the kid's just like, you know, they're celebrating this little block of junk wood that he should have thrown away, but he didn't. That's me. So I have all these, like, I have tubs of cords. I don't throw cords away.
I don't throw cords away. Don't throw
and
cords
so,
away.
So Jerry,
wrap those up.
Jerry's like, why do you keep all these cords? I'm like, you don't know when you're going to, like, a cord gets ruined or you find some old, you know, really with like old audio visual stuff, you know, you go, man, I wish I had, and then you go, oh, I got one of those.
Yes.
You know?
The back of my door upstairs in my room, I just have all these different, I have this thing, I don't know where I got it off of Amazon or whatever, and it has all these different components.
Yeah.
And it's just all the
cords
and little, just knick-knack.
Chargers and adapters.
It's amazing how many times my family comes there. Dad, do you got?
Oh yeah,
look on the back of the door.
Got it.
But everything else, I'm trying to learn to throw it. But yeah, cords, you definitely have to keep the cords. Now, I'm always interested in, like, I love asking people about how they propose. I love asking about that kind of stuff. But I also love to ask about the children. Like Brian, the first time, do you remember when you first found out that you were about to have a child? This is your first child. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember. So, you know, when we started talking about having a kid, we waited for quite a while. So, you know, like we were 30 years old before we had Bryant, and you know, by today's standards, that's probably not that long. When my parents were 30 years old, I was 11. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? So you know, the used to kind of the norm was, well, if you didn't go to college, you got out of high school, you got married, you had kids, you know, and so your kids were grown and out of high school, and you were in your early 40s.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Well, we didn't have a kid. We decided not to have children until Jerry got out of college and everything. Well, she was a non-traditional student. She didn't go to college straight out of high school. And so she decided to go back when we got married, and she got her degree and stuff. And so then we decided to have a baby, and it wasn't. I mean, it was like we decided, and then we were blessed to have a baby. You know, I mean, it was quick. Yeah. So, but yeah, I can remember she just come in and said, "Yeah, we're gonna have a baby," and I was like, "All right, cool." You know, I mean, it's what we were, you know, what we were wanting. And yes.
Once you had children, I don't know if you had thought about it, but was it harder or easier than what you thought? Were you like, "Oh, it's not as crazy as I thought it was gonna be," or was it like, "Oh my goodness, this is hard"?
Well, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you think. So looking back on it, here's kind of my thing. So I was coaching football, so I was gone a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, and so when Bryant was little, a lot of the burden was on Jerry. And I mean, I'd be gone all week long, get home, you know, we'd do Monday night JV games. So I'd be home at 10 o'clock. We'd do Tuesday night. We'd be up there at practice till 5:30, 6:30, you know, whatever. Wednesday night, we had a coach's show. So that was eight o'clock, usually 8 or 9 o'clock before we got done with that. Thursday night, we had team meal. And then a lot of times kids would come over to my house after team meal. And then Friday night, we have football games. Saturday, all day long, I'd be breaking down film and then go back up there Sunday after church and finish. So, there was a lot of times where she was, I mean, it's hey, you and Bryant, you know, I got to go get this stuff done, you know? But I think a lot of times too, so for his younger years, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I got out of coaching, because I looked up one day, I thought, you know what, I'm spending all this time with everybody else's kids and I don't have any time for my own kids. Mm. Like I'm missing their stuff to deal with other people's children's stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, I got out of coaching and, but what I've figured out, like, I don't know, I'm not saying figured out. So how am I going to say this? So most of the time it just rocks along. You know, you have these little spots where you can give them instruction, you give them lessons. They have a little bit of a hardship and you can kind of guide them and help them, but try not to do it for them. My wife will disagree and say, I do stuff for my kids, but I do things for my kids, but I also do things because I want it done now. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, okay, I can stand here and argue and mess with you, or I can just do this thing myself right now and get it done and it'll be over with. So we have that discussion at my house sometimes. Just only thing I would say to people who have kids is just make sure in the good, when it's good and it's rocking along real easy, make sure you're paying attention to what they're doing.
Yeah.
Make sure you're paying attention, because just because you think it's rocking along real easy, that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, that duck looks calm on the water.
Yeah.
You don't see its feet underneath.
Yeah.
You know, he may be going 100 mile an hour trying to stay that way.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes they just can just sit there, but that water may be moving them hard.
Yeah.
So pay attention to stuff like that. Like when you think it's going easy, it might be, but it might not be going as easy as you think it is.
Yeah.
So, but that's what I've learned with Bryant. Now, Blakely's easy.
Yeah.
Bryant was easy as a baby. So like Bryant, when he was little, if you didn't put it, you know, if he wanted to go to bed at 8:30 and that was his bedtime and you hadn't got him down by then, he'd just go get in his bed and go to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, Blakely, when she was little, nuh-uh. But now, Blakely's probably the easy one.
Yeah.
Bryant's getting that way, but he's still a little high strung sometimes. It's like, dude, like he's got that. I don't know how to say it. He's got that. He gets irritated about stuff like way too quick. Yeah. You know, yeah. I'm like, dude, calm down. Like, it makes him mad, but well, you know, he'll do something. I'll look and think, calm down, Jamal. And he'll be like, I hate it when you say that. Just like, I'm mad for a reason. I'm like, well, it's not that big a deal. Grand scheme of things, it's not that big a deal. Yeah. So
it's not heart surgery,
right?
Yeah,
like you're it's not gonna kill you. Just, you know. But
now I know you ended up teaching and coaching. And I mean, I want to ask a couple of different questions there, but let me ask this first, which we kind of relate back to family and all that. But let me first ask it: when you were younger, like, what did you think you were going to be?
Okay, so growing up, I had aspirations to be one of two things. I always had really good teachers growing up, and I always had really good coaches. And so I was going to either teach and coach, or I was going to be a highway patrolman.
Oh, okay.
So that was the two kind of aspirations that, you know, two things that both of them are in public service, but, you know, one of them's cool and you get to carry a gun, you know, you need to wear that cool hat, you know, but no, that was kind of the, I was thinking either teacher, coach or going into some type of law enforcement. And I was thinking about highway patrol, but, when I got basically into high school and late high school and college, and I started working more towards the teaching and coaching thing, just because I think a lot of that has to do with, I had good coaches. I mean, they were good mentors. They were good people. You know what I mean? We didn't always win. You know, my sophomore year in high school, we were 3-7.
Yeah.
I'd run through the wall for those guys. You know what I mean? I mean, and still would to this day. I mean, I had a phone call with one of them yesterday.
Yeah.
Called me about something, and I sat and talked to him for a little bit. And so, I mean, I'm 46 years old and still having a conversation with one of my high school coaches. I mean, that's cool.
No, that is cool.
So that's kind of where I was. I mean, as far as what I wanted to do with my life, you know.
Yeah. Now, thinking about teaching and being in the classroom and things like that, and there's a lot going on in the classroom. Sometimes as a coach, I don't know what you taught, but sometimes it's history, and sometimes you can get some of the, you know, you get a little bit of every kind of student when you teach some of those general ed courses. You get all the students. What did you learn to manage the classroom, and how similar is managing the classroom, investing in these students, do you feel like correlates with raising your children? Like, is there anything there?
So my classroom management wise, you know, to me, classroom management was never a big deal. Because I think maybe I'm probably more patient than a lot of people.
Okay.
Because you can't go in to me. You cannot. And people may disagree with this. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
You can't go in and treat every kid the exact same way.
Gotcha.
You can't. They're not robots. You're not dealing with the same. They don't have the same house environment. They don't have the same brain function. They're not the same. It's the same way I treat my kids. I don't treat my son and my daughter the same way.
Yeah. You keep talking.
They have different interests, and they have different, you know, things in their life that may, you know, upset them or that they're good at or, you know, whatever. So the classroom, it helps too that I'm gigantic sometimes. You know what I mean? Because like they're like, well,
I wasn't gonna say that. I was thinking, I was like,
well, yeah, so like, I, you so I walk like, around there like, well, at first, and then like I said, they figure out I'm not the Terminator. I'm not gonna go in and just terrorize everybody.
Yeah.
But I always just try to give a kid the benefit of the doubt. You know what I mean? Like try to figure out why like if they do have a behavior issue, like why are you acting that way? Like is it me? Because here's the deal. Sometimes in education, when you're teaching, you can take things personal. So a kid comes in and they're having a bad day, and it doesn't have anything to do with you, but you're the one that catches it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah,
so like whatever happened, that's what brought it out, but it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
Well, some people take that personal. Like it's a person. Like if a kid doesn't, you know, if a kid acts out, that it's directed at me when it could have absolutely nothing to do with you.
Right.
So The last 2 years I was in Enid, I worked in the alternative school, and that was great. That's where I formed a lot of this, was because those kids, every one of those kids had a reason they were in an alternative school. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, most of the time, it was a combination of things that maybe they made a bad choice, but it was also a combination of a bad choice, maybe on their part, maybe not. It may have been somebody else's bad choice,
yeah,
that kind of guided them and directed them towards where they were. And yeah, so trying to get them to flip that mentality and go back the other way. And like, you know, you just because this is the way you grew up doesn't mean this is the way you have to continue to live.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like you're going to be an adult.
Yeah.
So when you do get your own house, you get to make your own rules.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to, you know, if drinking and drugs was a problem in your house growing up, well, you don't have to carry that over into the new one.
Correct.
You know, this is your deal now. Yeah. So trying to get them to understand, you know, those kind of processes and kind of flip the mentality and flip the thinking on it. So, I mean, that was a lot of what we did at Lincoln.
You started at what age teaching?
I was 20. I was straight out of college. So I was 20, let's see, 2001. So I was 24 years old.
24?
I was 24. Yeah.
So so by that time you had been teaching for a while, investing in students, then you eventually get married, have children. Did you see yourself taking some of the things that you had learned from teaching kids and investing in kids into your parenting?
Yeah, a little bit. But then there's also that, you know, there's also my dad that comes out in me. You know what I mean? Like my dad would say, like my dad growing up would tell you to do something one time.
Uh-huh.
That's it. That's all you're getting.
Yeah.
So if he wanted to, if he wanted you to take out the trash, he would walk in and say, "Take out the trash." That didn't mean, you know, 7 minutes from now when you get done playing Mario Brothers that you got off your butt and took the trash out.
Yeah.
That meant that you hit the pause button on that game and you got up and you went and did it and you took it outside.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, so like with Bryant, for instance, and knowing Bryant. Bryant, sometimes you'll tell him and he'll go, "When I finish this, I'll do it."
Uh-huh.
And it's like, sometimes, most of the time I'm like, "All right, cool. He understands what I'm telling you. He's going to take care of it," because I got to trust him to go do the job I asked him to do. But then sometimes that my dad creeps into my head and I'm like, "No, not in 7 minutes. Now, you know, it's important. It's not important to him. It's important to me." And I'm like, "I want it done right now."
Yeah.
And
yes.
So sometimes I have to kind of fight that battle, you know, a little bit with myself as far as, okay, you know, set the guidelines you want him to do. If it's something that we got to do right now, you got to explain to him why we want to do it right now.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
instead of just hollering at
yes.
him, you know.
Why parents? Yeah, that's. I mean, I think I'm similar in the sense of like. When I grew up as an adult, it's like, you just do it.
Yeah, you just do it.
But I'm like, man, I wish they would have taught me the why. I may be a lot better off.
The why when I was growing up is because I said so. That's why.
I know, but it would have been much better if you
right.
like, no, you take the trash out. If nothing else, take the trash out and do it now so you can learn to do things and not procrastinate.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So then it's like, oh.
Yeah. So you have a sense of self-discipline that when you look up and there's something in the trash can,
yes.
you don't think about it. You just take it out.
You just do
like,
it.
Because that's what you're supposed to do to uh-huh. take care of your place, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. That was because I said so. was, yeah. You know, you always have those things that and I'm not picking on my parents. I love my parents.
Oh, no. Yeah, for sure.
And you always
would say the same thing.
Oh
now.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, they'd be like, "Yeah, I wish I could have done." I'd say that now.
If my dad sees this, he'll say, "Well, your problem is you need to whoop them kids," you know. So
maybe he's not going to say.
So, going back to the, I think kids now they. And at first I kind of looked at it and I was like, "Man, why are y'all asking me why all the time?" Like. We never questioned
yeah.
Like, we never questioned. Like, if a coach told me to go do this, I'm just going to go do it because that's what the coach told me to do.
Yeah.
Well, I think sometimes – now, I'm not saying all of them are like this either. I think you generally have some kids that they want to know the why. They want to know the reason. They don't, and it's not out of a disrespectful – it's out of let me wrap my head around why we're doing this, and if there's a better way we can do this. I think you really have kids like that.
Yeah.
But then I think you also have some little turd head kids that, well, why are we doing it? You know, because they just want to question you. So that was kind of hard for me towards the end of my teaching was, you know, toward the end of my coaching was, you know, we were successful and Guthrie football is still successful. I mean, it had nothing to do with me. It was good kids. But we would coach kids the same way every year, and then all of a sudden we got into this deal. Well, why are we doing it? Well, you want to know why? Look back over the years and see how many football games we won between here and now, and that's why we're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'd have to, like, check myself a little bit every now and then and go, who are you? Like, who are you to question what we're – you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know how many times I said, you know what, if you don't like the way I'm doing things, then go get your own football team, and then you can do them however you want. You know what I mean? But that's not the right attitude to have.
No, I think kids just being curious. If I think about my faith and think about biblical principles and Jesus saying be like little children,
mm-hmm.
I think some of that is because the curiosity speaks to just – man, we should all be curious to a degree, right?
Right.
And we should want them to be curious. Some of it's like just lack of patience. Like,
right.
I don't want to take the time to have to tell.
Right.
You
I don't need to have. That's why I tell Bryant sometimes, like, dude, it's taking more time for me to stand here and argue with you than it would be if you would just go do what I asked you to do.
Yeah.
Like,
let's just go.
Just
let's
get it done and let's move on with our day. Yeah. Like, there's going to be some things we got to do. We don't like them, but we got to do them. It's part, you know, it's part of life and part of being disciplined.
What is Scott doing when nobody's tugging at him? Like, what are you doing for fun or just? And just whatever that is that you enjoy.
I really enjoy catching crappie. I like crappie fish. Now, I don't get to do it a lot because we're you know, kids. You got activities and you got this and that you got to go to. And, you know, there's always things to do. There's always stuff to do around the house. There's always do. But when I really like to, you know, get off and get by myself, I like to go crappie fishing.
Yeah.
I like to just get out on the water and look at nature and catch fish. So.
Do you have to have somebody with you, or would you just go on your own? And
no, there's really good ponds here in town that some of the families in town here own, and they were I was fortunate enough they let me fish them.
Yeah.
And so before I had children, I mean it wouldn't be a big deal. Like let's say it wasn't during football season, and you know we were in off season or whatever, and so we'd be done by 4:30. Well, Jerry would be doing her deal and trying to finish up her day or whatever. And we'd have kids at home. And so we'd, you know, get together and eat, you know, later on 6:30, 7:00. Well, I would just call her and say, hey, I'm going fishing.
Yeah.
And I'd run home, grab pole, and I'd go out to a couple of these ponds and just sit out there and fish by myself.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, after school, I mean, it'd be a Tuesday afternoon at 4:30. I'm out there trying to catch crop, you know, now with children, that changes a little bit because you get, you know, you got to pick them up, you got to run. And then, the job I'm doing now, the schedule doesn't work like that. No, I like to fish. I like to play golf every now and then. You know, golf's frustrating. Golf's harder than what it should be. The ball's not even moving. It shouldn't be that hard to hit. You know, if it's nice enough, but when it comes down to it, if it's nice enough to play golf, it's nice enough to fish.
Yeah.
And if the fish don't bite, that's on the fish. That ain't me. If I hit a bad golf shot, that's my fault.
Yeah.
So if fish don't bite, that's on the fish. So
you're not hungry.
There's something wrong with them, not me.
Now,
so.
You like to fish. Is fish your, would fish be one of your go-to meals? Or
no. No. So here's the deal. I like to catch them. Uh-huh. I don't mind cleaning them, and I don't mind cooking them, but it's not my favorite thing to eat.
Okay.
Like, I'll eat it, but I'm not – and I don't eat seafood.
No seafood.
Because I don't live by the ocean.
So what's your go-to meal?
Oh, I like Mexican food, dude.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's it?
So, yeah. I mean, I like Mexican food, and I don't –
just bring it on, huh?
Yeah, I like enchiladas and tamales, and I like – man, I like all kinds of stuff. I mean, I like it all. So it's I like Mexican food. That's probably what we eat a lot.
Oh yeah.
Excuse me. When we go out to eat, we eat a lot of Mexican food.
Gotcha.
It's funny. My wife's Hispanic. I don't know if you knew that or not. Uh-huh. Yep. So Jerry's half white and half Hispanic. And so Bryant, this is my son's sense of humor. Okay. So my son is 25% Mexican.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's got blonde hair. Yeah. Like he doesn't look Mexican at all. Like at all.
Yeah, if somebody saw him, you definitely wouldn't think that.
No, you would not think at all. No. You know, and so the other day we were sitting there and we made some. Jerry made enchiladas or something, and I cannot remember how he said this, but he was like he takes a bite and he takes a bite and he's like I can, how did he say this? Something about I can taste the spices of my ancestral Mexican hair. Like, I can't even remember how he said it. And I looked at him, I'm like, man, you got blonde hair. Shut up.
I can taste my rich history. Yeah,
like I can like taste Jerry the, like it. He was representing the culture, you know what I mean? And I'm like, dude, you don't even speak. You got a C in Spanish in school. Be quiet. So
that is hilarious. I got that.
Oh, he does. Like, and so I get his, oh, here's another funny one. So this fool, he does his ACT or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, you get that report back.
Yes.
Well, you know, when they put on the ethnicity deal, they put down, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh.
This fool puts Hispanic on his deal. I'm like, come on, Brian. Yes. Come on, man.
So that young man, he rolling out.
Oh, he
bro.
Does. Yeah. He's proud of the heritage, man. In. Yeah, I like it. Good. I am too.
I definitely would not look at him and think anything but Caucasian, though.
No, he's got blonde hair, like blonde curly hair. Like, yeah.
Cool. But you know, that's funny though. So. That Mexican food is your go-to meal.
Oh, yeah.
So are you a person who enjoys to travel to experience food, culture, and all that stuff? Or are you like, no, I'm not going anywhere. I'm cool.
Look, I'm a homebody, right? Like, yeah. I really am a homebody, which I like to be with my family at my house. I just do. There's something comforting about it. But I don't mind the job I have right now. I travel all the time.
Yeah.
So there's some fighting going on, you know, like internally with me because it's a lot of travel. I mean, I was in last week. We were in West Texas in the Permian Basin, and next week I'll be in Louisiana all week.
Yeah.
And so this week I was back home in Northwest Oklahoma, and you know, just driving around up there in that country I grew up in, I do like being at home, and I think my daughter likes to be at home too.
Okay,
like there's something, you know. But now Jerry, I don't necessarily. She doesn't like to stay home. Like she runs and she goes and
get
I
up and go.
Do you and you know she do you wanna and she don't even get it out of her mouth sometimes. And I'm like, nope, I'm good.
I'm good.
As I'm watching a football game at my house, you know what I mean. I'm like. You know, and Brian will go, hey, you know, you want to go watch the OSU game or, you know, we're going to get tickets to the OSU game. And I'm like, Brian, why would I get tickets to the OSU game when I watch it on my TV?
Right here. It's right
if I want something to drink, I go get it. If I want to go to the bathroom, there's no line. You know, like if I want a piece of pizza, I'll just order one. Like I don't need to go up and figure out where to park my vehicle. And I mean, I like to do that stuff every now and then, but I, you know, it's
no,
not.
No, I'd rather be at home.
I like being at home.
We went to a Thunder game last night and, Bernadette, and we were on our way back. She's like, "All right, that was fun, but I never have to do it again."
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah,
like, it's not that for me either. I'm thinking about it, and we kind of the theme of this conversation has been family. And you talked about your dad. What is something like you feel like you carry on today that you learned from him? Or
okay, so here's the main thing that I learned from my dad. You're there, so. You're there. You're there spiritually. You're there financially. You're there as a person. Like you're there. Like if I pick the phone up right now and I call my dad, he's going to pick the phone up.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jerry didn't have that growing up as far as having, you know, her both of her parents in the house and having having that stability. My dad always showed up for us. And so he would work, you know, he worked at car dealerships, and he would work at a dealership until, you know, he'd leave at 7 o'clock in the morning or 7:30 in the morning, and he'd get off at 6 o'clock at night. Well, he'd come home and he'd eat. And then he would go over to my grandpa's shop, and he would shade tree mechanic, and he might not get home till midnight every night. But if that's what he had to do to take care of us, that's what he did.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have hobbies.
Yeah.
We didn't go on vacation. He worked,
yeah.
You know? So, that was one thing that I learned from my dad is just, you're there, you know, and whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, you pick the phone up and you're there,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, that's one thing that I hope to carry on with my kids.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. What is it that you've loved about Guthrie since you've moved here and, been part of the community, and what is it that you've kind of taken in?
I like the people. I like the size of Guthrie. It's perfect. It's big enough that there's a little bit of stuff to do, but it's not, you know, there's still only 7 stoplights in this town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and if you hit them all red, you can still get from Walmart to this side of town in about 10 minutes. You know, I mean, even if 5 o'clock traffic, like let's be real. It's not, you know, but
later I'm gonna count these stops. I'm like, man, there is only 7 stoplights. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you got so I think there's the one. Okay,
Pine.
There's Pine. There's
Noble.
Yep.
Noble Division.
Yep.
And then Harrison Division.
Yep.
Oh, Oklahoma Division.
Yep.
Walmart. That's it.
And Love's. The one I bought.
Yeah.
There's like 7. Wait, you know people are going to be driving around counting them, like checking.
Why do you know that?
I don't know. And there's probably more than 7. I don't know. It's just what it feels like, 7. It's a good number. It's a good number.
Is there one on the west side?
No.
No.
There ain't no stoplight on the west side.
Oh, hey. Bible Baptist.
Oh, yeah. Out there by my house.
Yeah.
It's not Bible Baptist anymore.
No, it's South Point.
South Point, yes.
Yeah. Shout out to South Point. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Yeah, it's the people, man.
It really is. I mean, it's a good community. You know, it's fun. The events are fun too, like the Bread Brick Nights and the Victorian deal and the 89er. I mean, they're people that are proud of their community, and it's not Guthrie's not like other places.
No,
it's really not.
And I
know people sometimes they've lived through their whole life like, man, man, you know, I can't stand Guthrie. I can't stand these people.
Yeah.
You need to live somewhere else for a little bit, and then you'll go, oh, you know what? Man. Guthrie's all right. I'm just telling you.
More and more from doing this podcast. I mean, I knew that. I've lived other places, and I'm
right
back. So, but like hearing my friends or hearing people who are from Guthrie who moved away, like listening to them, like just some of the things that I'm like, homecoming is not as big of a deal in other
cities. No, it's unreal.
We're doing parades and everything, and that's not. Like, what? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't celebrate homecoming the way that we do? But.
Nobody does.
Yeah, so it makes it a really special place.
It does.
What do you encourage people to do to give back to their community?
You know, there's a whole bunch of ways you can do that. I mean, you can do it financially. You can do it, you know, just basically the way I think a lot of times I like to do it is just find somebody that's got a little bit of a need.
Yeah.
And just help them.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go make a big presentation. Yeah. Just, hey, listen, I know you didn't ask, but I think this might help you.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then you give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
That if you don't, you know what I mean? And don't make a deal out of it.
Yeah.
I think there can be a lot of things solved like that.
Yeah.
No, stay off real talk around Guthrie. That'll help your community. Holy moly, that thing's a cesspool sometimes.
That is hilarious. I'm not on Real Talk around Guthrie. But it's so funny. Like,
goodness. People
who are from Guthrie
are
on Real Talk. And so they'll call me and like, oh my goodness. You know, I'm like, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, I need
to. I don't want to pull, don't so, even pull me in it. I'm good with
well,
knowing.
So when we were living in Enid and wanting to move back, I got on basically thinking, well, maybe, you know, we try to find a rent house. And so trying to think, you know, maybe I'll just get on this little, and then I'm just yes. like, man,
you said
wow, this is wild.
That is not the place, huh?
No.
Yeah, no, it's nuts.
No, it's
crazy.
Yeah, so.
But, yeah.
So stay off of that.
Stay off that.
Choose Guthrie and stay off Real Talk.
great lead into that. What does it mean to you when you hear Choose Guthrie or see the sign?
So it's about being proud of where you live,
yeah,
and taking care of your community and the people in your community. You know, we lived here for a long time, and we were invested in the community. I mean, I went through 18 classes.
Wow,
you know what I mean? I mean, that's a full set of kids. You know what I mean? And so. Just investing in the community, being there for people and you know, shopping when you can shop local and just try to help the people here, you know. Yeah. But we moved somewhere else, and then, you know, the whole time it was just like, this is not home. Mm-hmm. You know, Guthrie's home to us.
Yeah,
so
that's cool.
We like it here. It makes me crazy sometimes when people, man, I can't stand this place. I lived here my whole life. I'm like, man, you've been blessed. Like, you have no idea. You have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I know every place has its little things or whatever, but you know what I mean. Like, everywhere you go.
Yeah,
and sometimes the grass ain't always greener.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know somebody said the grass ain't always something like,
it's green where you water it.
That's it. Yep. Yeah, like that's the reason Choose Guthrie is so important. That's the reason I think, like, this thought about community wins. Like, it's just all about how you invest in it. Like,
yeah.
If you're willing to water and all that stuff. So good. Scott, thank you so much.
Yeah.
For coming to hang out with me. I took you longer than what we normally go.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
I'm good. So, I have nothing to do today. So
thank
I mean,
you
I'm
so
sure
much.
I do, but
yeah, no.
If I'm over here hanging out, then she ain't bothering me about it. So,
Jerry may say different. Ladies and gentlemen, thank y'all again for hitting that play button for another episode of the Guthrie America podcast. Hey, continue again. Big shout out to Kevin Kraft at State Farm, North Church Guthrie. We are on a mission to have every story told of the fabulous people who do life here in Guthrie America and who are from here. The question is, will yours be next?